Hey everyone, I'm Carrie Dan. I'm the managing editor of the Cook Political Report, and this is Editor's Roundtable. And this is exciting because I get to talk to my colleagues, Amy Walter and Jessica Taylor. Hi guys.
Hey.
Hey Carrie.
So this is like a very special episode of Editor's Roundtable because we want to take a big holistic look at the race for control of the United States Senate. In Michigan, Abdul El-Sayed won the Democratic nomination for that Senate seat. There were some who said Abdul El-Sayed is not electable statewide. Democrats have basically flubbed their one chance to take back the Senate. We kind of want to do a bit of a reality check on what happened in Michigan and what the rest of the map looks like and answer that question, right? Have Democrats blown it? So Jess, I'll start with you. Big holistic question. Can Abdul El-Sayed win in Michigan?
Yes, he can. Will he? I don't know. It is a true toss-up. He is a riskier candidate than had Haley Stevens won. And I think that, you know, when we saw just how close that race was and obviously did not follow polling, he has some real work to do to build back the Democratic coalition. And, you know, talking about, you know, if he's for working class voters, well, Haley Stevens won white working class voters in areas and she won black voters. So he has some work to do to sort of rebuild that traditional Democratic coalition. Republicans are already out talking about, you know, he's Muslim. They're not being shy about making that front and center and using his whole name and making him sound radical. Radical is the word you're going to hear. They're talking about his association with streamer Hassan Piker, who has said, but walked back that America deserved 9/11. And they're contrasting that with the fact that Republican Mike Rogers is a former FBI officer, analyst. And if this was 2024, I think I would rate this race differently. But it is 2026, where Donald Trump is anywhere between 20 to 30 points underwater in Michigan. And that is going to help Abdul El-Sayed. So is he a weaker candidate? Yes. Is the environment bad for Republicans? Also, yes. Both of those things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, it's like so interesting, Jess, because we have seen in really bad years for one party or the other, the party was able to survive in these swing seats because of a flawed candidate, right? So 2022 was a terrible year for Democrats, but they caught a break with Republicans nominating flawed candidates in Georgia and Arizona, two very high profile exceptions. What makes this the same or different?
I think there were weaknesses. I mean, you had in Georgia, you had Herschel Walker that was just, it was candidate weaknesses versus ideological weaknesses to me. Mm. That he was out there talking about vampires and had a background of holding a gun against the head of his ex-wife. I mean, it was character flaws almost, but I think that this is more about the ideological shift of the Democratic Party and that that is where a lot of the primary voters want. But it comes down to, is Mike Rogers able to get those Republicans to come out for him and to get those independent voters? Care on like just candidate issues, Abdul El-Sayed was a better communicator. He's a very gifted orator. He has candidate skills that someone like Blake Masters or right. Herschel Walker in particular did not. So I guess I'm not putting him in that category just yet.
Yeah.
Is the verdict still out? Yes. And, you know, is there more stuff that could come out on him? Absolutely. That's why, again, I've said all along that he was the riskier pick. But
yep.
Does that mean that he cannot win? At this point, I don't see it. But it's a toss-up versus I think that this is a race that may have been tilting in Democrats' favor.
Yeah.
Haley Stevens been able to.
You know, the other piece, too, is that Blake Masters and Herschel Walker were running against incumbents. Sam Brown in Nevada was running against an incumbent. In this case, it's an open seat. Mike Rogers has some name ID from his last statewide race, but Jess, he's not exactly, you know, a well-known, well-established figure there.
And he's not lighting the world on fire right yeah. now either. That's right. One thing I've heard from Republicans is that they, like in the days leading up to it, there were sort of some recriminations happening too, saying, you know, that he needs to raise more money, he really needs to take advantage of this, that they feel like he's had a high burn rate. So Republicans are not particularly impressed or pleased with the type of campaign that Mike Rogers is running either right now.
Right.
And Amy, you have a new piece out that makes the very good point that in Michigan and in some of these other states, by the way, the president is deeply underwater. Voters are very upset about the economy. And really, the Republican candidates have to outrun the president by a wide margin. And they want to talk about anything except for Donald Trump and the economy. And you made the point that Al-Sayed makes it easier for right. them to do that, right? Because they can make it a referendum on him as a person and as a candidate rather than on the president.
Right. And, you know, look, here's where Rogers, the fact that he's not in Congress is somewhat helpful, right? That he does not have votes on some of the controversial issues that other Republicans up this year do have. He has not had to vote on the War Powers Act. He has not had to vote on the One Big Beautiful Bill. Now, of course, he's had to take positions on those issues, which I'm sure Democrats will point out. And Rogers was not in Congress during the era of Trump. So this is the other thing, too, Jess, that I find sort of fascinating. He's both a pre-Trump candidate who would be a good fit at this time, someone who could distance themselves from some of the more unpopular positions the president and this Republican Congress have taken. And yet he's also not going to light MAGA world on fire, right, to get that base to show up for him. And it really does feel, you all, like we are living in this sort of bifurcated reality right now. I mean, every indicator out there shows an environment that is just horrific for Republicans. It's not just the president's approval rating. It's not just the fact that Iran continues to be a drag on the economy. By the way, new reports out this morning that unexpected drop in employment for this last month. So the numbers keep coming back terribly for Republicans. And it's not just independent voters that Republicans have to worry about losing. I think their own voters are super depressed, that they have really no incentive to show up. Now, in Abdul al-Sayed, what I think Republicans are hoping is that it can motivate on the fence sort of Republicans to show up. Haley Stevens wasn't going to get them all that exorcised. Here, the case that Republicans can make is, yeah, this isn't just electing a Democrat, a sort of traditional left Democrat to the Senate. This is electing somebody who is radically left, who is attached to the not just the Bernie Sanders wing of the party, but just as you pointed out with Hassan Piker and some of the other influencers, some of the most controversial figures on the left. And I think that will be the challenge for Rogers, is being able to win over the normies without also abandoning the just Trump voters who just don't feel particularly happy with the state of affairs under Republican rule right now.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I think this is one of the key things that why Rogers underperformed last time, because if he had just met Trump's numbers, he would be a senator right now, is that he's a Bush Republican. And there's been a lot of skepticism in MAGA world about him. You know, is he part of the deep state as a former FBI agent? You know, like he's not the most natural fit. But yet, to win the primary before and to be seen as a legitimate Republican, he's had to move to the right. Versus, I think if he had sort of stayed in that more middle lane, he would be a more appealing candidate right now to take advantage of this more left-wing candidate in Abdul al-Sayed. So, you know, there's, I think, you know, the biggest hindrance for Mike Rogers is Donald Trump, hands down. The biggest hindrance for Abdul al-Sayed is probably Hassan Piker right now. That you're going to see those clips just, and I mean, we're right at the 25th anniversary of 9/11 as well.
Yeah, and Jess, I want to pivot to talk about another race. We went through a part of this summer when all anybody could talk about was Graham Plattner. And the dust has now settled there. Democrats have settled on their alternative to Plattner, but that was another place where there was a lot of hand-wringing about Democrats blowing it. What are you hearing about how that race is going to shape up between Troy Jackson and Susan Collins?
Yeah, I'm hearing some more optimism from Democrats. They feel like Jackson is running a pretty solid campaign. He's still sort of, he doesn't have a lot of time to put things together, but they feel like he has the message that Graham Plattner had without the baggage. Now, if you watch the ads from Republicans, they are absolutely tying him to Graham Plattner, and whether this will work, we will see, because, every other Democrat in the state was still sticking, a lot of those voters that they need, they were still sticking with Graham Plattner despite the Nazi tattoo and the Reddit post and different things. So I'm not sure that we'll see if that sort of condemnation works, but again, just Susan Collins, we saw this week that she is not voting for Todd Blanche
Right.
for Attorney General. So that gives her a vote to point to where she's broken with the president, which I think she had to do. And then, again, she is underwater in the state. Donald Trump is even worse underwater in the state. And it becomes, I think that they've got to make this a referendum almost. In so many ways that they want this race, like in Michigan, they want this to be a referendum on Abdul Al-Sayed. In Maine, they want this to be a referendum on Troy Jackson. You see the ads, they're all, that he's scary, that he has a temper, all of these things. But I, to me, it's just this is a race and this is an environment that is about Republicans and Donald Trump. And so I think that if Jackson can run a competent campaign, which there is every indication that he is doing that right now, he's more of a generic Democrat,
Right, which
and
is exactly
he
what they needed.
is exactly what they needed. So I'm hearing more optimism, I think, from Democrats, and I think you're nodding, Amy. I think you're sort of hearing the same thing.
And let's talk a little bit about the rest of the map, because obviously, as you've written very eloquently, Jess, the Democrats have always, throughout this entire cycle, needed to pitch a perfect game. Graham Plattner was an errant pitch in that, to say the least. Some would say Abdul Sayed is not the slam dunk that Haley Stevens may have been in this environment. But the reason that we're having this conversation is that there's other states that are on the map, Texas and Iowa among them. You moved the Kansas Senate race into a potentially competitive space too. Sort of walk us through those other states, Jess, and then Amy, I want to get your thoughts on that too.
Yeah, I mean, what it boils down to is still, as you mentioned, Democrats, they still have to sort of, everything has to go right, but we've seen everything go right before for them. So it's not out of the question that this could happen. And we were talking earlier, Amy was, that this sort of feels like 2006 when at the Senate map, everything else had to go right. And you saw these states that felt like they were way out of reach, like Virginia and Montana coming on board. And that's sort of what this feels like, too. So North Carolina is still the most vulnerable seat to flip. We rate that as lean Democrat. Maine has to be the next one because it's the only state held by a Republican that Kamala Harris won. Beyond that, you still have to have at least two double-digit Trump states. The most likely ones are still Ohio and Alaska. But beyond that, as you mentioned, you have Texas, you have Iowa, and then now you have states like Kansas coming on the board. Democrats are feeling bullish about a place like Mississippi, where they have a very good recruit and where Cindy Hyde-Smith is weaker. So, they have more states that they can play in, and I think just the more that they are making Republicans play defense, they feel better about that as well.
Yeah, now they're talking about pushing independent candidates over Democrats in, we obviously have that matchup in Nebraska where it's just an independent versus the Republican senator. So hope, and a lot of pressure in Montana for the Democratic candidate to drop out so that the independent candidate in that race can take hold. I mean, it is true, Democrats are on the move, right? We take Michigan off the conversation for a minute. Everything else that Democrats are doing is playing offense and trying to put seats that, I mean, look, I don't know that I'm still skeptical that a Kansas, Nebraska, Montana, Mississippi, Florida right. are going to come into that most competitive category. But the fact that Democrats have been able to rally and motivate their voters and to get strong candidates there is important. I think it sort of sets a mindset for other Democrats, right? Like, we can win this. It sort of infuses a sense of optimism. And to me, the real question going forward is, again, taking Michigan off of the map for a second, how well can Democrats do in some of these double, as you said, Jess, the double-digit states that right now are single-digit races? And when you look back at 2006, at the seats that Democrats flipped that year, you're right. A lot of them, they were red states. They were states that Bush carried. But Ohio in 2004 had voted narrowly for Bush. As we all, everyone on this screen, I was going to say on this, I don't know what this is now. What do we call this medium?
Editors Roundtable.
No, but I mean, it's like political a medium. It's like we're on a screen. Right. People are listening. Anyway, the point being, the only state that was double digit for the president, the Republican president, the election before in 2006 that Democrats flipped was Montana. And that was overwhelmingly Republican. I think Bush had won it by 20 points. But even Virginia, which way back in the long ago days was Republican, Bush had won it by 8 points. Again, Trump won all these other states, the Ohio, Iowa, Florida, Texas, Alaska, by what, 11 to 13, right? So it's a higher hill to climb than
even some of these states are right in that 11 to 13. Ohio this time is.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is we've never seen a time, at least in this modern era, where a party has been able to flip multiple double digit
right.
states.
Right. Which is why it's so hard and why
right.
we say that Republicans are still favored.
But right.
Here's but, the catch. Here's, yeah.
But that the doesn't mean that, it can't happen.
No.
And the, right. And I think that's important yeah. to put that
yes.
very fine point on.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's just that we don't, like, to me, the biggest unknown right now, we're inching closer to Labor Day. We're about a month away, and that's the unofficial start. If we're still in a quagmire in Iran, that is, you know, because I remember talking with people in the spring, and they thought this was going to be wrapped up, and we wouldn't be talking about gas prices. And if that's still going on, if people are still connecting, you know, when I've been talking with Republicans, it's not the war, which I mean is certainly depressing Trump's base, but it's the fact that they connect it to prices, higher prices across the board, that is the problem with the war right now. And the fact that Trump doesn't seem to care.
You know? Right. Right. He's given Democrats sound bites that they could only have dreamed of.
Yeah. I mean, Carrie, think about all of the elections we've covered with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket. And the question was always, or either at the top of the ticket or in the White House. And the question was always, could the bottom fall out for Republicans? And it seemed that that was impossible because the president's floor was so high. His support among his base was so strong that our polarization is so deep and so solidified that no matter what big events, whether it was COVID, whether it was the National Guard, whether it was impeachment, none of that could move the president's floor. And I think, and this is a question, Carrie, is that true? Is Iran the issue that ultimately is going to move that floor? Because that feels more like a true betrayal than many of the other issues that Trump's detractors were upset with him about.
Well, I think it is possible. And we see in our poll tracker, the Republican approval for Donald Trump is still very high, but
yeah.
it's around 80%.
Yeah.
And that's psychologically for the president is lower than, I mean, he started out at above 90% approval with all any self-identified Republican. So he's seen an erosion. And I think that erosion started exactly when the war started.
Yeah.
For exactly the reason that you point out, that it's a very explicit promise that he made to not get embroiled in foreign wars. And he is, and this is, he, it keeps on going on and on. And I think by setting up the early on saying, this is going to be over fast, I promise, and having the entire party on that, you know, on that talking point, and it's just, it's not happening. And yeah. I think that that's why you see, are seeing Republican, I mean, and if you're a Republican voter who likes Trump and he's not on the ballot, and he's railing against Republicans in Congress for not doing the things that he wants, what makes you specifically motivated to go out and vote when he's not on the ballot for a party that he's sort of tried to distance himself from the Republican Party, right. Which is exactly what you don't want to do yeah. going into a midterm election.
Right. And Republicans are stuck. You can't, you know, the idea that, oh, well, we can vote now maybe for a War Powers Act, or there's no good way out of this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it feels like what they're trying to do is white knuckle it through November by doing exactly as we started this conversation talking about, trying to delegitimize Democrats who, it is true, don't have exactly sterling job approval ratings either.
Right, exactly. Everybody hates Democrats. Everybody hates Republicans.
But
everybody
hates
Democratic Socialists.
Right. But that is pretty thin gruel at a time where people are really, really not happy with the state of affairs in this country. And, you know, I think, yes, there will be some Democrats that end up missing the opportunity to ride this wave because of their own flaws or because the Republican effectively tagged them as too extreme. But the Iran piece, I just think, can't be overstated at how significant of a drag and how different of a drag this is on the president and on Republicans than even COVID or all of the other issues that he had dragging him down in 2018 were.
Who could have known that a war in the Middle East was a bad idea electorally?
Right.
Well, this has been a great discussion, and obviously keep reading at cookpolitical.com to get all of the updates on what is happening in each of these races, because Amy, as you pointed out in your piece, there's the macro and then there's the micro, and the developments in each of these races, each of these candidates could make the difference come November. But that's all we have time for today, but we have so much more coming up. Jessica and I are going to be going live on Tuesday, August 11th to discuss primaries in Wisconsin and Minnesota, as well as the special election in South Carolina to replace the late Lindsey Graham. So please tune in, watch that on Substack or YouTube. You can look for links in the show notes. If you are already a subscriber to the Cook Political Report, thank you. And if you are not, please consider subscribing today to read all of about all of these races that we've been talking about and so much more. Go to cookpolitical.com/subscribe to learn more and sign up. Until next time, thank you from all of us here at the Cook Political Report.